Okay, thanks a lot. It's a pleasure to continue with this series. There was in fact already a first reduction in the other talk since I went from first day was a PowerPoint or equivalent file, next day was a PDF file from tech, and now it is Blackboard. So we are narrowing and narrowing as it becomes more specialized. Do we have enough chalk? Yes, very good. Okay, so today I will mainly insist on some of the ingredients that I evoked yesterday, go a little bit in the core, in behind to see the machinery behind, and I will present some possible developments and where to go from now, and insist on this regularity issue that I already addressed at the beginning. So let us start by recalling abruptly the equation. So this is the Bladov equation we are talking about, df dt plus v grad x s plus f generated by f grad df equals u. Okay? And the force generated by f, it depends on time t, depends on x, it is minus gradient of the interaction potential convoluted with integral of f dv. F is a function depending on t, x, and v. You integrate in v, it only depends on t and x, and this is a spatial density. And you take the convolution in the x variable, this is the interaction potential. Okay? And you recall yesterday I explained how you deduce this equation from basically the Newton equation, just saying that the density of particles is constant along trajectories. And in Landau damping, we're interested in the regime where F is very close to F0 in some sense, F0 being a special homogeneous equilibrium. So let us write F equal F0 plus H, and the equation becomes dAct plus V grad H plus F generated by H, because the contribution of F0 to the force is negligible, grad V F0 plus grad V H equals U. Okay. So I will make a few, several points today. The first point is the linear analysis. Linear analysis, so when you linearize the equation, you remove this term, which is the only quadratic term in the equation, the rest is linear, and you obtain this. dTh plus V grad H plus FH grad VF0 equals U. How do we analyze this equation? Let's put ourselves in the torus, so say x is in the d-dimensional torus, which is Rd over Vd, and V in Rd. And let's go with the Fourier transform, and for the moment, just assume the force is equal to zero. If f equals zero, what we have is just dth plus v grad h equals u. And this we know how to solve. If h of thv is equal to h initial value of x minus vtv. It's immediate to see that this satisfies the equation. In fact, you are going along geodesics in phase space. Geodesics on the torus has a constant velocity and is x minus vt. This is considered, of course, modulo z. Now, when we take the Fourier transform, see what happens. So I take the Fourier transform in both variables. So k here is dual to x, eta is dual to v. This is double integral of hi of x minus dt v, exponential minus 2 I pi eta dot v, exponential minus 2 I pi k dot x dx dv. Okay? by definition of the Fourier transform. And now what I will do is change variables. Here, this is dxdv. I will use the change of variable, just replacing xv by x minus vtv. And of course, this has unique Jacobian. It's even obtained by Hamilton and flow. So I replace here x minus vt by x, and conversely here x by x plus vt, and then I separate the exponentials, and I obtain integral, double integral of hi of x v, exponential minus 2 I pi eta dot v, exponential minus 2 I pi. So there will be an additional term coming here, which will be vt dot, k scalar vt, and there will be exponential minus 2 I pi k dot x, dx dv. And here occurs the miracle, if I may say, that k scalar vt is equal to v scalar kt, of course. But this means that this term here, I can consider it not as an exponential in k, but as an exponential in v, and then it will contribute to this exponential here in v, and appear as an argument in the Fourier transform in the velocity variable. So this, in fact, is nothing but hi Fourier transform of k here, and here eta plus kt. Okay. And I said it yesterday, but I repeat it here. In particular, if you look at h tilde of tk0, this is preserved in time. T0 eta. H tilde of 0 eta. So you have an infinitely many invariants. In fact, the x average is invariant. It's a function of v. You integrate in x, it's a function of v. And this function of x, this function of v, doesn't change with time for the free flow. And if k is non-zero, then h tilde of t, k eta, converges as t goes to infinity to what? To hi 2 log log. So this goes to infinity, so this converges to zero. With a rate that directly depends on the velocity regularity. Okay? The regularity in velocity is the decay in the Fourier variable that is dual to the velocity. And the conclusion in particular is that in the case f equals zero, free flow, in the torus, so this is well known, this is well known fact that is good to recall and keep in mind, for f equals zero in the torus, the solution f of txv, did I call it f, no h, this converges as t goes to infinity to integral of h I of x v dx. There is averaging in the x variable. And this, of course, is a function of just v. The limit is the same here, plus infinity or minus infinity time. And the convergence is, in the sense of convergence of Fourier modes, in fact, it is a weak convergence. It is a weak convergence, but the speed of convergence is determined by the regularity in velocity. Now, if I incorporate the force, what will happen? This will not be exactly as nice. Let us consider this term here as a perturbation and apply the Duhamel formula. Our superposition principle. And you get what? You will have the same beginning, H tilde of T K eta equals H I tilde of K eta plus K T. And then there will be an additional term coming from the force, and this will be exactly minus integral from 0 to T of S H grad V F 0. This is still for the linearized equation. Evaluated along the free flow, so tau x minus v t minus tau. Fourier transform here. Fourier transform, and here this is it will be k eta tau k eta plus k t minus tau. Now, why can we continue from now on? It's because of this special structure. Observe carefully that this is a function of time and position, and this is a function of just velocity because F0 is homogeneous. Then when I take the Fourier transform, it is a product of the Fourier transform of this by the Fourier transform of this. So, computation, SH grad VF0 field is equal to F Fourier transform multiplied by grad VF0 Fourier transform. This one in velocity variable, this one in position variable. The force is given by the convolution of minus grad W by integral of H dV. And here I keep grad V zero tilde. And now this works beautifully because Fourier transform works well with convolution. We just multiply Fourier transform. And Fourier transform works well with gradient. We just multiply by the variable. So this will give what? There will be minus 2i pi w hat of k multiplied by the Fourier transform of integral h dv, which is the same, if you think about it, as h tilde of k0. Integrating in V means taking the zero Fourier mode in V. And here, this is multiplied by 2i pi eta, f0 tilde of eta. So this is when I evaluated at k eta. So you see it works completely beautifully because all the ingredients we have here, there is the convolution, there is the gradient, perfect. And this this was understood by Landau and by Blazov. You're right, there is a thing here. Okay, now when you summarize, you look everything, you collect things, you find in the end the formula. You find in the end this formula. Before writing the formula, I will say this. Here, we obtain an equation involving not the whole distribution of H tilde, but the velocity averaging. And I have this equation here, which is about h tilde at t k eta. So let us take in this equation eta equals 0 in the order to find some equation that will involve only h tilde of t of k 0. So let me write rho 1 of tx equals integral of h of tx dv. Yes. Sorry? Where T? Where T? Okay, everywhere is T. If you want, here there is T. Here there is T. No, that's not it. Integrate from 0 to T, and here integrate in tau. Where should there be another T? This is the integrand. I did not put an equal sign here. I say, oh, let me remark that blah, blah, blah equals blah, blah, blah. Okay? It's okay. By the way... Okay. So let us introduce this notation. And then from this, we obtain the following. Rho 1 hat of tk. So just to make sure, it is the same as h tilde of tk 0. Taking the 0 velocity mode once again is the same as integration z. And you find that this is equal to h I tilde of k kt. It corresponds to taking eta equals 0 in the first term in the right hand side here above. Minus 4 pi squared w hat of k. Integral from 0 to t of rho 1 hat of tau k f0 tilde of k t minus tau k square t minus tau d tau. Okay. Now, this also appears in the work by in the works by Landau already. Razov and Razov certainly also had had this formula. Now, what is remarkable about this formula and essentially all the theoretical analysis that you can work out of the Razov equation is based on this fact. Observe carefully the miracle that this is a closed equation on rho 1 hat of tk. This is a closed equation on rho 1 hat of k viewed as a function of time. So there is an amazing decoupling. There is an equation for the mode of order k equals 0, another one for k equal 1, another one for k equal 2, etc., and they don't communicate with each other. In this sense, a linearized Lazoff equation is completely integrable, in the sense that you can decompose it in this infinite product of equations which do not speak to each other. And it's a simple equation because, look, if I just look at the time dependence, this is a function of tau, this is a function of t minus tau, so it's just a convolution in time. And here we are looking at the Volterra equation, that is a simple one in which the kernel is of convolution type. Mode phi k of t equals rho 1 hat of tk satisfies an equation of the form phi k of t is some source depending on k and t plus integral from 0 to t of phi k of tau and some kernel k of t minus tau d tau. Okay. And then this is problem. The problem is the following. Assuming you have a good decay on this guy, which is a source term, does it follow that you have a good decay on phi k? It's not obvious because phi k appears here and here. And it's a classical problem about behavior of Volterra equations. The short answer is that if the Laplace transform of this guy does not approach 1 on a strip, if the Laplace of this guy, K0K. Okay, let's forget about the K. Its Laplace of K0 does not approach the value 1. It doesn't take the value 1 on a strip real part of lambda, lambda the argument of the Laplace transform between 0 and some number lambda, then you inherit, phi k inherits essentially the decay properties of sk, then phi inherits the decay or almost the decay of s, of the source, up to exponential minus lambda t. It will never be faster than exponential minus lambda t. So this is the effect of this kernel, integral kernel that you add. And that's exactly the point where you can start the analysis of the stability of linearized Vlasov. Depending on, the kernel depends on what? The expression of the kernel depends on F0. And now this is your problem. You have a kernel here. When does its Laplace transform touch the value 1, approach the value 1 on a strip of positive width in the complex plane? Okay. And now there are criteria for that. The criterion which is equivalent, necessary and sufficient for the stability, is called the Penrose criterion. It's Oliver Penrose, not Roger. So you have stability. What is this? In the sense of exponential convergence, if, and basically it is and only if, for any omega in R, okay, I state it in dimension 1 to simplify. Multidimension is just a simple variant. For any omega in R, which is such that the derivative of F0 vanishes, then when I look at the integral of F0 prime of V divided by V minus omega dV, this is strictly less than 1. Okay. This is a condition. If F0 satisfies it, then you have the stability, linear stability. If it does not, then essentially you don't have. Okay? Okay. It's not, still not so convenient, but very close to be. Now, let's take a particular case, sufficient condition, which is the one that is very easy to remember. I'm sorry. Here I put W hat of K. And this should be for any K. So let's assume that F0 is like this, increasing up to V0 equals 0 and then decreasing. Okay? Then, where does F0 prime vanish? Only for omega equals 0. So all I need to check is the condition when this is equal to 0. Now, if V is negative, then F0 prime is positive, so the integrand is negative. If V is positive, then F0 prime is negative, so the integrand is negative again. If that guy is positive, then positive times negative will be negative, a fortiori less than 1. So if you have distribution function that is increasing and then decreasing, and W hat is non-negative, then you have stability. And this is what what lambda obtains. What time did we start, by the way?
15.
Okay. Okay? So now, if you don't have, so this is okay for Coulomb interaction, W hat non-negative. For Coulomb interaction, W hat is 1 over k square. Now, if you look at Newton interaction, then it does matter. It does matter what you have, because W hat will be negative, and then the criterion will not apply only at, on a certain for certain values of the constant that you put. So for Newton equation, it's okay only if, say, for a Gaussian distribution, it's okay only if you put things in a box, if the size of the box is bounded above by square root of pi times t times gravitational constant times the density. Square root pi t over g rho 0, where t is the temperature of the Gaussian, rho 0 is its mass, g is the gravitation constant, and pi is 3.14. Okay? So, this is first fact. Basically, I gave you here all the ingredients for the treatment of the linear Landau damping. Now we like to switch to nonlinear. And so, as I was explaining yesterday, yes, the fact that there is this instability for large size in the Newton case explains the fact that galactic matter tends to cluster instead of being homogeneous like plasma matter. Second point, functional analysis in view of the nonlinear problem. When you are in this problem and you try to make compositions, composition has a very bad influence, a very bad effect on analytic norm. For instance, you take, we want in this problem, we want to have, we understood first from the computation here, that if we want to have exponential decay, necessarily we need analytic regularity to have exponential decay, at least in the velocity variable. Now, analytic norm, what do we put as analytic norm? The simplest thing is to say, take something like supremum of f tilde of k eta, for instance, let's say, yes, k eta exponential 2 pi lambda eta exponential 2 pi mu k. Okay, good analytic norm that ensures that the decay in Fourier space is exponential. Now, if you do this and look what it is, for instance, if you take a function f and compose it by just 2 times the identity, and let's say that this is norm of indices lambda mu, f composed with 2 identities, you will find that the best you can do is to bound this in norm lambda mu by the f in norms 2 lambda 2 mu. So you lose on the space. And 2 identity, of course, is a very extremely nice map and so on. So you see that if in this problem you don't want to lose too much, you need to control very carefully what you have here. And you need to have estimates that are more precise than just bound. So here is a fact. Fact, it's like an exercise. If I define f lambda, let's put just one variable to simplify. F lambda to be sum of over n of lambda n divided by n factorial and this is the supremum of the nth derivative of f. Okay, then it's easy exercise that first f g lambda is bounded above by f lambda g lambda. And now, okay, in particular, f power n, fn norm lambda is bounded above by f lambda power n, okay? And now, here is a less known fact. When you take f composed with identity plus some perturbation which I write g. And I put this, I look at this in norm lambda, then this is bounded above by f, note constant here is 1, f with constant lambda plus the norm of g with index lambda. So here you lose again, but the amount that you lose depends on the size of the perturbation in a way that you control. So you lose again in the functional space, you lose in the exponential decay, but the amount that you lose is precisely controlled and not this game, that the norm of g arises now as an index. It's not just we lose something that corresponds to the loss of the regularity, but also to the size by which you compose. Yes, you cannot improve this. The only thing is this shows that you have to be very careful, and the fact that you choose these nice norms gives you an exact nice formula. This is just so that you have to be very careful. Okay, I thought of giving the. Okay, proof is an exercise. For those who want to try, let's give as an exercise. Just the trick is to start. So you write h of x equals f of x plus g of x, and you use the Taylor formula to write this as sum of f derivative m of x multiplied by g of x power m divided by m factorial. This is the sum over m. And then you estimate things, you take derivatives of this, you apply the Leibniz formula, this gives you derivatives of this and derivatives of this. And then you recognize that you use the fact that the norm, this thing here, you apply it here, that the norm of g to the power m is bounded above by the norm of g to the power m. So I don't give details, but this is the starting point of the computation. So this is proof. Okay. And now in the present case, we'd like to use this good algebra property, but then we have two variables, position and velocity. And in this case, what works very well is to use this recipe for the x variable, another recipe for the v variable. This recipe for the v variable, another for the x variable. And then you obtain the formula which was in my talk yesterday. Norm of f in a space with indices, several indices, so lambda for the v regularity, mu gamma for the x regularity, p for the integrability, and index tau is equal to the sum over n, the sum over k of lambda n divided by n factorial, exponential 2 pi mu k, 1 plus k to the power gamma. And here I take derivative in velocity n times. I take Fourier transform in the x variable only. I take LP norm in the velocity variable. And here there is the correction to I pi tau k, which makes it invariant, this correction, and shows that the solution of the free transport of dth plus v grad x h equals 0 satisfies h of time t in norm z of index t is a constant. So you change your focus if you want. If you look at the solution of free transport, it's something like this. This is free transport in free space. So this is K, this is eta. And as time becomes large, all the Fourier modes are shifted. The energy, if you want, in Fourier space is shifted. So this is the time t, which is greater than zero. And this is the line which is eta, approximately equal to minus kt. This is the region in Fourier space in which you want to focus to make sure that you follow the free flow in the Fourier space. Focus on eta approximately equal to minus kt. Okay? And then you work out the functional analysis in the same way as this, but for this family of norms. So, for example, here is one that we have. If you take a function f which depends on x and d, and you put a perturbation in the position variable, a perturbation in the velocity variable, where x depends on xv, and v also depends on xv, and you take the norm of this guy with parameters lambda, mu, p, and t, let's forget about gamma. This is bounded above, again with constant 1, by norm of f with some indices alpha, beta, p, and sigma, where alpha is equal to lambda plus norm of v, norm in lambda mu infinity t, and beta is equal to, again you lose here, mu plus lambda t minus sigma plus x minus sigma v in the lambda mu infinity t. So you see here, it's the same, exactly the same as here, except it's just a bit more complicated because there is in addition the free flow that induces things like this, x minus tv or something like that. And there are two different indices, one for the position, one for the velocity. But apart from this, it's the same. And you see here, when you are able to say that your, if you are able to say, for instance, that your solution of Lazoff equation is the same as solution of the free transport, apart from some correction, because trajectories are not exactly free transport, but free transport plus some perturbation, you will have good estimates. You will not lose too much on the indices. And the game, of course, you will have an iterative procedure in the end, is to lose as little as possible. Okay, important remark. When you take a function here that depends only on x, let's write it a rho, for instance, as the spatial density, and you apply this norm, say lambda mu, again forget about the gamma, t, let's put infinity here. This is equal to sum of exponential 2 pi mu, lambda t plus mu k rho hat of k, absolute value, sum over k. And look at this. This lambda t plus mu here is in the exponential. This means you control the decay, for large k and large time much better than you had initially. If you want, when you apply these norms to a function of x, assuming you have of just x, the norm is stronger and stronger as time goes. It's like you increase the regularity. And that's exactly what happened in the case of the Lazoff equation. What will happen is that the force, for instance, or the density, the spatial density, will have its regularity increasing with time, increasing linearly in time in the scale of analytic functions. And that's the whole philosophy behind our approach with Clément and myself, is instead of focusing on decay, focus on the regularity. and show that there is a higher regularity. As time goes, you improve the regularity. And this automatically will entail a decay. Yes, everywhere. And let's say T positive, although you can relax, there are some conditions for T so that it makes sense and so on. Okay. So you gain regularity in X. Wow. What normal? From the fact that Yes. I will write some statement. Assume that you have a function depending on time, which is uniformly bounded in lambda mu. I'm sorry, I put here, yes, it's okay. Lambda mu, and here I put index 1, t, and I assume that this is O of 1, uniformly in time. Okay? If I have this, then the regularity of f in the velocity variable gets worse. You have fast oscillations around eta special frequency approximately kt. So if you want, the k mode will oscillate in velocity at a frequency which becomes very, very high. The k mode starts oscillating like this. This is the k mode, and here in the velocity variable. And here it's about 1 over kt, the typical oscillation length. So you lose on the regularity in velocity. However, the regularity of integral of f dv improves in time. Improves in time. And this implies in particular that the associated force, the regularity of grad W convoluted with integral f dv also improves in time. Improves in the fact that the rate of exponential decay becomes more and more, higher and higher. Like it's exponential minus lambda tk, essentially. But now, because the interaction is via a gradient, this guy has zero, has no mode of order zero. Okay. So, all modes are of order at least one. And then we understand why regularity implies decay. Because if I look at this, the force, so f hat of tk will be, it's exponential 2 pi lambda kt, if you want, lambda tk. This is order one. And k is at least equal to 1, otherwise force is equal to 0. Only k at least 1 counts. So f hat of tk is bounded above by exponential minus lambda t, first cool estimate. But you see, you have the time decay. So improvement of regularity is converted, improvement of regularity in of rho, because the force is interaction is by a gradient, this implies time decay in t. So now things start to be falling in place. We have this regularity in velocity that gets worse and worse, but when I integrate in v, I have regularity in x that becomes better and better, and this better regularity implies a decay. And now we will forget about the decay and focus on the regularity, which contains much more information because it separates. It gives you different rates for the various components k. Okay. Now, in terms of regularity, what can we hope? So what you want to, so the general loop, so to speak, is the following. If the force satisfies an estimate like f of t, if the density is something like f of t in norm zt bounded above by c, this implies in particular that f decays exponentially, as we saw, the force. And if the force decays, then asymptotically, the trajectories will look like free transport. Trajectories are approximately free transport as t goes to infinity. Now, recall when I started the linear analysis, I used the Duhamel formula and the free flow and the formula for free transport to deduce some kind of homogenization, some free formula, something was going well. Here, if I try to do the same, the trajectories will not be free transport. They will be trajectories induced by the flow. But if I know that they are kind of free transport, I can hope there is also some effect of homogenization. And with this effect of homogenization, you hope you can get a loop on this. So when you do this, homogenization density for integral HdV. So when you do this, you see you work at the same time at the level of trajectories, the level of this density. So both Lagrangian point of view and Eulerian point of view. Maybe there is a simpler way, but we did not get it. So I will not say anything about this. It's like you are given a force field and you want to show the trajectories are approximately free transport with some precise quantitative statements. And next step is you say trajectories are approximately free transport, you want to deduce some good homogenization properties. I will talk a little bit about this step, which is the one which is most singular, and replace trajectories by free transport. So for, let's replace trajectories by free transport. And replace the equation by the following dth plus v grad x h plus f h grad v f bar equals zero, where this is given. And so the force here does not act on h. No term fh grad vh, no term of some force applied to grad vh, which would have the effect to curve the trajectories. Here, when you look what the first or the differential part acting on h, is just the free transport part corresponding to free flow. Okay? So this is given, but unlike the previous calculation that I made at the beginning, I will not assume that it is a function of t and x of b only. I will assume it depends on t, x, and v. And now, if I try to redo the computation at the beginning, it will not be so simple because I won't have the separation of variables in function of x, function of v. And there will be additional terms. So you go again through it, and you see here, this will depend on x, this will depend on x. So when we do the Fourier, we'll have a Fourier transform of this times this, and at the level of Fourier variables, it will be convolution. So dependence on x, convolution in Fourier variable in k. And so you get an extra term, which is the following. So it was about an integral from 0 to t, you remember? And now there will be a sum over all modes v, dd. And here I will put gradient w hat of k minus l. And you see here the role of the interaction potential is to couple the modes. At the beginning, the modes were independent in the linear computation. Now the modes will be coupled by the gradient of the potential. And how strong is the coupling? Well, it depends on the smoothness of W. And the less W is smooth, the stronger the coupling will be. If W is very smooth, let's say analytic, then this decays exponentially fast with K minus L. But if it is not smooth, say Sobolev smooth, then you have not the case. So here you have find rho hat of tau K minus L. And here you find grad V H bar of tau L K T minus tau. Okay, it looks very similar to the one I made in the beginning of the computation, except there is this convolution in the ZD variable. Now, this, let's assume, it's bounded by 1 over k minus l to the gamma plus 2. This is if w hat of k is O of 1 over k to the 1 plus gamma. It's convenient to introduce this parameter gamma that would be exactly 1 for Coulomb interaction. I'm sorry, this is just gamma. And because gradient multiplies. And this here is your unknown. You remember at the beginning we were finding some closed equation on rho hat. Now the equation will not be closed frequency by frequency, but you have something on rho hat that will involve the rho hat here. The equation for k will involve all the rho hat of k tau k minus l. And this is given, and this is what? Okay, so I want to estimate this, roughly speaking. There is a gradient V that will multiply by KT minus tau. And the solution, and assuming, for instance, I have an analytic thing, exponential minus K eta plus KT, this would be the decay of the solution of free transport. Here, it will be, so eta is this. So I have something like exponential minus constant times, at best, constant times k t minus tau plus l tau. Okay. And then maybe there is a very good decay in the velocity. It's okay, exponential minus ck. But I cannot get rid of this because there are these fast oscillations. This guy oscillates very fast in velocity, and I will feel this. When do I feel this? This is k t minus tau plus l tau. The time where it is not small is when this approximately vanishes. So this is this is not small when tau is approximately kT divided by k minus L, assuming k and L are collinear. And now you see the thing. This is a resonance problem. This is a resonance problem, and it's a big problem. When tau is equal to this particular value of time, you have no decay here, and you are in very bad shape. However, what will save you in the end is that you have an integral over tau. So even if for any tau you have, it will pose problem, for any k and l, you find the value of tau which poses problem. When you integrate in tau, it should not be so bad. So to estimate the effect of this, let us see things from a distance and replace this exponential by a Dirac kernel in time. So it will concentrate on the particular time, which is kT over k minus L. I'm sorry, this is decay in L here, because the argument here in L. So to get the feeling, let's make some wild approximations that has to be just to get the heuristics. So because I have a very good decay as L decays, I'll only consider L equals 1. So let us retain only L equals 1 because it decays very fast as a function of L. Say L equals minus 1 and K positive, because this makes sense only if K minus L is positive. And so you see that in the time integral, in the tau integral, the speed of this guy is k minus l, which is approximately k. So I replace k. Sorry. And I replace k exponential minus c kt minus tau plus l tau d tau. I replace this by something like Dirac mass, 1 over c, times Dirac mass on tau is equal to kt over k plus 1. And I put this in the kernel, and in this way, we'll obtain a baby a baby system. And then the baby system that you obtain for, say, quantity that would be phi k of t equals exponential 2 pi lambda t plus mu k rho hat of t k, in which you try to see that this quantity is uniformly bounded, for instance. The baby system that you obtain is phi k of t bounded above by some function, some source function, which is very nice, dk is very nice, plus constant times t divided by k plus 1 to the power gamma plus 1 times phi k plus 1 of kt over k plus 1. So this is your baby system, baby estimate, baby model. Okay. And the question is about the same as before. Okay, here there should be also the contribution of k0 as in the linear case, but let's assume we know how to treat this and this is no problem. There was a contribution of k0, which was this Volterra term that was giving us trouble in the linear analysis. Now in the nonlinear analysis, there is an extra coupling between modes that gives us problem. The coupling is as strong as the stronger when gamma is small. Okay? And now I should conclude. Try to conclude in just one blackboard to give an idea. So let us assume that ak of t dvk is bounded above by exponential minus ak, a very good exponential decay. Okay? And then you look for power theory solution. Like phi k of t is sum of a k m t to the m, sum over m. And you work out the induction relation that you put in this coefficient. This you assume is exponentially small. And this you see, you will put here the new coefficients, etc., and you find some equation between them. And what you find is that, okay, a k m is bounded above by a times k exponential minus ak, k to the m, c to the m, exponential minus am, divided by m factorial to the gamma plus 2. So that's the important thing. So this is basically speaking, you inherit the decay of the source, the ak, up to a term which is like this. Exponential minus m, so it's a good exponential decay, divided by m factorial to the gamma plus 2. This is like a fractional exponential, essentially fractional exponential constant k power 1 over gamma plus 2, if I don't say any mistake. Yes, exactly, kt. Okay, so in the nonlinear case, in the linear case, we were losing essentially nothing. In the nonlinear case, because of the interaction, we lose a power of t, which is like exponential t to the 1 over gamma plus 2. So here, if I have a good exponential, a good decay, I obtain a decay which is the same multiplied by essentially exponential t to the 1 over gamma plus 2. This is a loss in the sense of, if it would be a polynomial decay, it would correspond to a loss of Sobolev regularity. Here this is a loss of Jeuvre regularity, if you want. You lose infinitely many derivatives, and it's a fractional exponential. So for this reason, to compensate for this, gamma is the decay of the potential, interaction potential. Coulomb, gamma is 1. So for Coulomb, gamma is 1, and you lose something like exponential psi to the 1/3, approximately. Okay. And so that there we are. This here is in a nutshell why in the theorem I explained yesterday, in which we get the Landau damping in arbitrary large times, regularity needed is at least Jeuvre 1 over 3, or a bit better, in the velocity variable. Okay. I have already gone over the time. At least I gave you an idea of why this Jeuvre regularity, and I'd be happy to answer questions if there are.